Are you searching for the best in online black radio? Then go to blacktalkradionetwork.com, helping you filter through the noise. Real talk, black talk.
The internet is full of half-truths and all-out lies. We've all seen them, and many people on social media complaining about it. Here's your chance to show and prove. WorldAfropedia.com is a black-owned and
the gay rights movement is changing everything.
At the Supreme Court today, a long-awaited showdown over LGBTQ rights in employment. The justices will hear a set of cases testing whether the federal law that bars sex discrimination in employment applies to LGBTQ employees. Specifically, the question is whether employers are free to fire employees because they are gay or transgender. NPR Legal Affairs correspondent Nina Totenberg has more.
For 10 years, Gerald Bostock was the child welfare coordinator for Clayton County, Georgia. His primary responsibility was a program that provided advocates in court for abused and neglected children.
It's the job I loved, and my employer loved me doing the job. We actually reached the benchmark of serving 100% of the children in foster care, which was an unheard-of milestone for any Metro Atlanta program.
But in 2013, Bostock joined a gay recreational softball league.
And from that point on, my life changed. Within months, I was fired for being gay. I lost my livelihood. I lost my medical insurance. And I was recovering from prostate cancer when this occurred. It was devastating.
Amy Stevens is not gay, but transgender. She worked for 6 years as a funeral director for the Harris Funeral Home in Livonia, Michigan, presenting as a man. But by 2012, she was in despair over her gender identity.
I stood in the backyard for an hour with a gun to my chest, but I couldn't do it, and I chose life.
Stevens decided she would come out at work as a transgender woman. For 8 months, she worked on a letter to her boss and coworkers telling them of her sexual identity.
I realize that some of you may have trouble understanding this. In truth, I have had to live with it every day of my life, and even I do not fully understand it myself.
2 weeks after giving the letter to her boss, Stevens was fired. Amy Stevens and Gerald Bostock both took their former employers to court, charging that their dismissals were based on sex and thus violated Title VII of the 1964 Civil Rights Act, which bars discrimination, quote, because of sex. Now their cases are before the U.S. Supreme Court. Neither Clayton County officials nor their lawyers would agree to be interviewed about the Bostock firing for this broadcast. But the owner of Harris Funeral Homes, Tom Ross, explained in a videotaped interview with his lawyers why he fired Amy Stevens.
The families that we serve, how would they possibly react to this? It's just kind of beyond what you can possibly think of. And this individual, Stevens, was a face of Harris Funeral Home.
Now, under the 1964 law, customer preference is not a justification for illegal discrimination based on sex. But the employers have a broader defense. It is that Title VII of the 64 Act does not apply to sexual orientation or gender status at all. John Bursch represents the Harris Funeral Homes.
Everyone understood in 1964 that sex meant biological sex. So treating a biological woman less favorably than a biological man because she is a woman. And that just does not translate into other categories.
The employers are supported by 15 states, including Texas and its Solicitor General, Kyle Hawkins, who makes what he calls a common sense argument.
Sex is not the same as sexual orientation and not the same as gender identity.
Lawyers for the fired workers counter that the Supreme Court over the last half century has interpreted the law far more broadly than that. Stanford law professor Pam Carlin notes that the justices have applied the anti-discrimination statute to a variety of situations that Congress was not thinking about in 1964.
In 1964, you wouldn't find a single dictionary that defined the term sexual harassment. And yet, the Supreme Court has held that Title VII prohibits sexual harassment of women, but also sexual harassment of men.
Indeed, more than two decades ago, the Supreme Court ruled that even same-sex sexual harassment was illegal under the statute. Stanford's Professor Carlin, arguing for the gay employees, today will remind the justices of the court's very first sex discrimination case after enactment of the 1964 law. At issue was a challenge to an employer policy that barred hiring women with young children. The court ruled unanimously that the policy was illegal sex discrimination.
And we say, if it's sex discrimination to say you can't work for us if you are a woman and you have children at home, it's also sex discrimination to say you can't work at us because you're a woman and you have a wife at home.
She argues that just as women with children are a subset of women covered by the anti-discrimination law, so too are gay and lesbian employees.
If you wouldn't fire a man for marrying a woman, and you would fire a woman for marrying a woman, you've discriminated against the woman who works for you.
The argument for transgender employees may be politically more difficult to sell, but it's arguably more stark. It goes like this. If an employer hires a man and later fires him when he shows up as a woman, how is that not discrimination because of sex? Making the counterargument today, lawyer Bursch will tell the justices that sexual orientation and gender status simply do not fit under the 1964 anti-discrimination formula. He warns that if the court were to rule against the employers in these cases, it could have serious ramifications beyond employment.
If we redefine the meaning of sex in federal law, it has implications far beyond this case, including allowing biological men to identify as women and take women's places on sports teams.
Federal law does indeed bar sex discrimination in sports programs at schools that get federal money. And the NCAA has elaborate rules for dealing with trans student athletes. But as Stanford's Carlin observes,
Title IX is a different statute, and the regulations under Title IX for having separate sex teams and the like are different than the rules in the workplace.
Lawyers for the employers counter that these and many other questions simply were not anticipated by Congress back in 1964, and that given the changes in society since then, it is Congress that should address these issues now, not the courts. Nina Totenberg, NPR News, Washington.
College don't mean shit. Y'all niggas, and you gonna be niggas forever, just like us, niggas.
On you right now at 6, some Orlando firefighters are demanding the city make changes after a first responder admitted to using a racial slur.
Nine Investigates has been following this story for more than a year, and tonight, investigative reporter Shannon Butler found out the mayor and council have had enough and are vowing to make some changes.
Black firefighters addressed the city council today, asking them to do something when it comes to firefighters who use derogatory terms. Today, the mayor and the union both said they will sit down and talk about some serious policy changes.
Gregory Meeks represents firefighters all over Central Florida and is demanding change at the city of Orlando after engineer Nicholas Tootin called another firefighter the N-word.
Nigga! He is a public servant whose salary is paid for by all communities of Orlando. He does not deserve the honor. This honor, he needs to be relieved of duty immediately. His presence dishonors the entire fire department.
Tootin and other firefighters were preparing for dessert at the firehouse when he blurted out the N-word. This is what he said when he was questioned about it.
Roger made a comment about me eating dessert first and made a comment. I know there's different discrepancies about exactly what was said, but said something about my weight, and I responded to him or just as a general comment, no. First.
Not only did he remain employed, but an arbitrator ruled that the city had to reinstate him to his previous rank after being demoted. Firefighters say the city should not tolerate that behavior and should do better.
It's about what's right and what's wrong. We are the city beautiful. We are on a world scale. And if we allow things like that to happen to our people that are working for us, how is the public supposed to trust us?
The mayor and the union have agreed to sit down, and changes could soon be made.
Commissioner Patty Sheehan addressed those firefighters, saying this continues to happen at the Orlando Fire Department. She said it was an embarrassment to the city of Orlando. In Orlando, Shannon Butler, Channel 9 Eyewitness News.
Niggas.
An Indianapolis man is suing Mercedes-Benz, its Lafayette dealership, and the owners of that dealership.
Jeffrey Turner is a former employee and says the company fired him after he complained about the owner's repeated use of the N-word. News 8's Jenny Dreisler has been following this story. And Jenny, when did this all happen?
Well, Jeffrey Turner says that the hostile work environment that he says he experienced at the Mercedes-Benz in Lafayette really ramped up about 6 months before he was fired in October of 2017. And now he's looking to change a culture of racism he says runs deep at Mercedes-Benz.
In a news conference Wednesday, Jeffrey Turner, flanked by his lawyers, detailed allegations of racism and discrimination they say were common at Lafayette's Mercedes-Benz location.
We drew the line in the sand when the derogatory vulgarities were used, and they were used with such ease. They were effortlessly used.
Turner filed a discrimination lawsuit in federal court Tuesday. Turner says he was fired from his job at the Mercedes-Benz Lafayette dealership for insubordination in October of 2017. Turner says during his time at the Lafayette dealership, the owner, Mike Razor, repeatedly used the N-word and bragged about charging African-American customers more for cars.
Wow! Hey, yo, drama, hold up, sir. Hold on. Stop the motherfucking record. All right. I want you to Pondy replay, drama. Pondy replay. Let's give him one more chance, man. Run that shit the fuck back.
Turner says during his time at the Lafayette dealership, the owner, Mike Razor, repeatedly used the N-word and bragged about charging African-American customers more for cars.
You have to be able to treat people with respect. You have to be able to treat people with the utmost courtesy. And he's not always a courtesy person. He's very curt. He's very crass. But he gets away with it because he's a dealer principal.
The suit also claims Turner was a regular subject of verbal harassment and said Razor referred to him as, quote, his favorite N-word. He also alleges during a meeting his boss's son said if you turned the lights out, you wouldn't be able to see Turner because he was black. Turner says Mercedes-Benz retaliated against him for speaking out about the repeated use of the N-word by his employers. Turner says the discriminatory culture is a company-wide problem at Mercedes-Benz that he wants to see changed.
It's not like that just at one particular dealership. It's a very good old boy network. I have to go on with my life, which I intend to do, but at this particular point, Mercedes-Benz needs to change their culture.
Attorneys for Mike Razor dispute the allegations, but admit to using the N-word one time during a meeting. We've also reached out to Mercedes-Benz of North America for comment, but have not heard back yet. Attorneys for Turner say the statute of limitations was up today, and that's why they decided to file now. No timeline yet on when this could appear in court, but Turner is seeking damages and a jury trial. Jenny Dreisler, Wish TV News 8.
Context of white supremacy. Gusty Renegade, in for another broadcast, hopefully to share constructive information on the system of white supremacy. Before we get to the date and all that other rubbish, that should have been two rewinds. In the segment at the Lafayette Mercedes-Benz, they said the boss's son, I almost feel like rewinding the clip right now, they said the boss's son said, let me get my C.K. Lewis routine on. Look at here. If you, presumably talking to an older black male, they didn't give a name. I don't know. I mean, they didn't give an age. I don't know if we're talking the boss's son who's Charlie, who's 6. The boss's son who's 10. Boss's son who's 9. Boss's son who's 5. 15. How old is the little fella? Anyway, let me get my C.K., Lewis C.K. on. If they turn the lights off in here, we wouldn't be able to see you because you're so black. Ha, 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 ha. I got a million of them. Wow. The boss's son and white people are ignorant about racism, white supremacy. I don't know how old this child. I mean, we could be talking a child. Like I said, it could be a 5-year-old, could be a 7-year-old. Who knows? But the boss's offspring is coming in and making racist jokes about you. Wow. Workplace racism. I don't even think that has been mentioned before. And that does happen in a lot of different workplaces where either your employer's offspring will be in the work environment, or your other coworkers might have your offspring there. I've seen that. They have those bring your children to work days, and then, you know, just different things happen where they bring their children in. That, you know, in and of itself might deserve a code. And I think I have heard other instances where a white person's child was in a work space and made racist comments about a black employee. I think even calling him a nigger, I think I've heard that before. I just hadn't thought about it. That's not as prevalent as some of the other things. Urine, I mean, hey, we hear about that all the time. But children and how you deal with the children of people that you work with or work for, that might, you know, deserve a bit of thought in advance, just in case you happen to deal with that. If anybody has had, you know, to codify that or encounter that in the workspace, feel free to share the number 605-313-5164, the code 564-943 pound. Press star 61 if you would like to participate. Now we can, you know, do the proper introduction. Our weekly segment, Neutralizing Workplace Racism. The date, Friday, October 11th, 2019. So I have been told. This is not a broadcast for spectators. If you have figured out, hey, I don't have those type of problems. None of the little urchins that come on the job, they don't mess with me. You know, they say hi and keep it moving. I don't have any candy on my desk or nothing. I don't deal with any hijinks from little racist hooligans in my workplace. No way. If you have figured out how to deal with that and or any of the other problems that we regularly deal with while we are on the job, please dial in and let us know what you have codified to help you solve problems without creating new problems. The number 605-313-5164, the code 564-943 pound. Press star 61 if you would like to participate. Certainly, if we have folks, if you are having problems with white urchins on your job, making racist remarks or otherwise mistreating you, or any other difficulties that you would appreciate counter-racist suggestions on how to go about solving problems, again, without creating new problems, maybe a different perspective on viewing what's taking place, definitely let us know. The number again, 605-313-5164. The code 564-943 pound. Press star 61 if you would like to participate. You can certainly email if you are not able, not in a spot where you can dial in and share your email, and we can anonymously share your comments, suggestions, whatever it is, on the broadcast, untiljustice@gmail.com, untiljustice@gmail.com. And we can share your comments, suggestions. Live over here today. Wow, so much to get to. The audio clips, reports, folks that wrote in, just a plethora. Before we get to any of that, Orlando was mentioned, the Cows 2019 Counter-Racist Yoga Retreat. We had multiple folks. I was said, is there any way you can make it a bit more accessible? And I worked diligently, did some checking, and I found a similar location. We'll still have all the same amenities. Everyone will still have beds. The whole nine will still be right next to the Orlando airport, approximately 30 minutes from the Orlando airport. So same setup and all that, but a cheaper location, substantially cheaper, in my opinion, enough that I was able to trim $200 from the price of the retreat. All the folks who already signed up, it'll be deducted from the second payment, so everybody gets the same discount, pays the same amount. And for folks who said, hey, if you could make it a bit more accessible, I would love to hang out in Florida. Minus $200. Price is $730. The deposit, I want to take advantage and try to nab things, tie things up as early as possible. The deposit, moving the date to October 24th, so folks will still have time to process, think about it. October 24th, it would be $380. The deposit, and then the final $305 is due the second weekend in December on retreat again, December 28th. That is a Saturday, January 1, which is a Wednesday. 5 days, 4 nights, vegan meals, plant-based meals. The whole time we'll have counter races workshops. We'll be doing yoga every day while we are hanging out in Florida, hopefully with good weather and no hurricane. The updated information is on my blog, racism-notes.blogspot.com. You can email if you need any additional input about the retreat. Took a while to kind of see if I could reconfigure to accommodate comedy requests. Try to make sure yoga is accessible to people who need it the most. All right. Workplace racism. Cup runneth over today. Doing the news segments first, and then we'll get to emails, and I get to go first for workplace racism today. So the news segments, that's the big talk a lot this week was the Supreme Court and LGBTQ rights in the workplace. I guess there's some geography bias, depending on what part of the world you're in. Me being in Seattle, where they have, you know, an entire section of town that is, you know, considered this is the mecca for LGBTQ people, and their flags are proudly displayed, and you know, they have their big parade and all that. It's challenging for me to imagine someone classified as white being denied constructive resources on the basis of them identifying as lesbian, queer, gay, trans, whatever it is. It is, you know, I don't want to say impossible, but I mean, wow. Like, really? Certainly nothing that we're going to compare to racism and white supremacy, which in my view, this is. If I go into the Civil Rights Act of 1967, certainly that sort of thing. And conflation, we're talking about that so frequently. Conflation, that was why to play that, and they put in so much time, and they had someone who I think classified as white. I almost killed my... Oh, no, wait a minute. They had the one where I put the gun to my chest. I can't recall NPR ever having a segment where they had black people talking in that type of detail, emotional detail about the trauma they experienced in the workplace, and I mean, you could pile them to the ceiling. You could have firefighters alone. I think retired firefighter alone could take up a good 30 minutes on NPR talking about the workplace trauma he experienced over his career as a public servant, no less, South Florida. Anyway, but the one that one really took the cake, getting on my metaphors for today, they had a segment where the individual, who also seemed classified as white, I couldn't be an error in his audio, said that thought about this for 8 months. Transgender. I'm going to write a letter to my employees to explain all of this. I wrote down in massive letters, TMI. If I got such a letter in the workplace, I would just file that in my workplace journal, and that would be it. I do not have a comment. I do not have a thought. I did not need to know all of this. As opposed to Tim, we're supposed to call you Tina now? Is that it? Call people what they want to be called? Got it. It was Mr. Johnson before, and it's Miss Johnson. Got it. That's all I need to know. I do not need an 8-month analysis of your journey through TMI. But comparing all of that to the firefighter. We just had that big report last week where they were urinating. They had to make tutorial videos to encourage firefighters to not urinate in their fellow firefighters' helmets. And beverages. I'm so sorry. My memory's bad. They were compelled to make tutorial videos to stop firefighters from urinating in their fellow co-workers' beverages and helmets. That's what it was. That's not going to the Supreme Court, you know, to deal with that. What should be done about that? The punishments for that. Then we get to Orlando. That's just this week. I said it's no sure you find things in the fire department every day. They had the one where they wouldn't even give a black child ice cubes. He got a runny nose. We don't give niggas ice cubes. What are you doing coming to the fire department? They had the Orlando Fire Department. Where suspected racist accused of calling a black firefighter nigger, no surprise there. And even the context, where he says, well, he started it, because he got reinstated. He started it. He came in and made a disparaging comment about my weight. He had the audacity. This is a chubby white man. We have video for this one. He had the audacity to come in and say something about me eating dessert first. And, you know, after he disparaged, he was fat shamed. That's what it was. This was just, it was something that got a ride. And I'm sensitive about my weight. See, that's the way he can explain it. He fat shamed me. And I responded, well, I let the niggers eat first. And he got his job back. No discipline. Reinstated full rank because he was demoted too. But then he explained it away. The Lafayette situation. That was the one at the Mercedes-Benz dealership. And I already said about the, they said the employee's son came in and made the racist joke. Super important. The actual rewind on that segment, they said, additionally, the fruit doesn't fall far from the tree. The father of said son bragged about selling black people vehicles, Mercedes, presumably, at a higher price. Addition to the workplace racism, we get that stance in that regular, on a regular basis. We charge the neighbors more for a residence, apartments, or housing, whatever it's going to be. We charge them, you know, double, triple the property. That was in family property. Carol Satters, her program by Chicago, allegedly best plantation in the universe. But same thing with the vehicle. The niggers come in. I'ma call the niggers who work here. I'ma call them niggers. Have my son come in and call them niggers. And then when the niggers come to buy their high-end vehicles, so that, you know, they'll feel like they're not niggers, we're going to charge the niggers extra and brag about it. Mr. Fuller said that is a key component of white supremacy racism. Bragging about terrorizing and abusing black people. Not hiding, being proud, boasting about mistreating, stomping on the niggers. Always be mindful of that when we're going out to make purchases. I guess that would be another reminder about being frugal in the system of white supremacy. We don't want to be spending too much money because invariably it ends up in race soldiers' hands to just do more of the same. Continuing. A report that I found, and then we'll move to personal. Dusty will go first today with workplace racism. New York City comptroller pushes 56 companies to commit diversity and adopt the NFL Rooney Rule. This was in the Washington Post today. For people who don't know, the Rooney Rule is the National Football League. They inducted a rule some years back where national football teams are required to interview non-white candidates. I don't know if it's every single time that they have a head opening vacancy, but non-white candidates are at least supposed to be getting regular interviews in the NFL because racism and white supremacy was being practiced, and you had all these black players, but very few black head coaches. So they enacted this, and they've done this, I think, in some other professional sports leagues where they've tried to adopt a similar rule. So the report reads, the man in charge of New York City's $200 billion public pension fund wants more than 50 companies to take a page from the National Football League and pledge that they will consider female, that should be white female, and minority candidates. That could be LGBTQ or lots of room there. For our highest level jobs, Scott Stringer, the New York City comptroller, on Friday announced that he has sent a letter to 56 companies, including AT&T, Boeing, Delta Airlines, Marriott, Walmart, and Walt Disney Company, asking them to adopt policies to consider white women and people of color for every open board seat. Again, even the phrasing of that, every time, why would it be women and people of color? Why would that even need to be said? The only way that this needs to be said, unless it's you think white women have been mistreated, unless that is not the case, it should be explicit. White women and non-white people of color is incorrect either. Make it explicit what you're talking about. White women and non-white people for every open board seat, as well as the CEO appointment. The move is in line with the so-called Rooney Rule, an NFL policy adopted in 2003 that requires every team to interview at least one person of color for head coaching vacancies. It now includes other high-ranking front office positions. The rule is named after Dan Rooney, the late former Pittsburgh Steelers owner who also chairs the league's diversity committee. As a pension system, we want to invest in 21st century companies that represent the future, not companies with many teams that look like they're out of the 1950s. Stringer said in a statement, it's time for the business world to embrace these reforms that will lead to decades of progress. Stringer's office said the companies have yet to adopt Rooney-type search policies for boards or CEO positions based on his review. Other companies such as Facebook, Amazon, and Costco Warehouse have adopted such policies at the board level at times in response to investor pressure. I'm not sure that anyone would say that those companies are super diversified and black people are filling out the ranks in high-ranking positions at those organizations. But again, this was not about black people. This was white women. Minority. That's what they said. I think that word is in the word guide, minority. The email again is untiljustice@gmail.com. Feel free to write in if you have comments to share, questions, suggestions. I have several emails to share, but Gus T going first today on workplace racism. I think I announced a month ago, because that's when it all started. So I think a month ago, I announced that I got an internship, a yoga internship, for 3 months. And I wanted to do this, even though you were not being compensated, I wanted to do this because I wanted to get opportunities to teach. It's like anything, practicing racism, practicing counter-racism, you have to practice. And I wanted to get opportunities to teach. It just so happened that this studio is very close to my residence, and it is pretty posh. I think it's the nicest studio, yoga studio, that I've been to. So I said, oh, wow, that would be great. Get an opportunity to get some teaching reps in, and in a really nice studio that's easily accessible. Win-win-win. And I can add to my resume, bolster my resume as a yoga instructor. So I got the internship. Whoopee, which included even more than I thought, studio time to take pictures, also to bolster the resume and other help bolstering your resume so you can look even better moving forward as an instructor. All things great. We should all be looking for opportunities to hone our craft so that we can enhance our career opportunities. So I am 1 month into my 3 month internship that is supposed to last until about the beginning of December. I have taught exactly two classes. You're supposed to teach at least six classes as a part of the internship. So I just finished teaching my second class. The studio owner, white woman, She says, hey, you've done a great job. In fact, well enough, you should be getting paid. I was going to talk to you about filling out an application so you can go ahead and be employed. You've done great work in the classes you've taught and absolutely well enough to be paid to teach. Now, I thought that was important because I think I had mentioned before, we've talked about many, many times, confidence. I think the system of white supremacy, a key aspect when you erode black self-respect. You have many victims of white supremacy, many black people. We are not allowed to be confident in our possessions, in our professions, or even just confident in life, period, or in areas where we have strength beyond the workplace. That is frequently denied. I mean, we had a listener, an investor, her child was at school, and the teacher said he had to check him. We check confident black people in the system of white supremacy, and particularly in the workplace, a lot of times, non-white people don't get to feel competent that, oh yeah, I'm good at, you know, what I do, I'm good in my field, you have to be, I am an expert, but I do have expertise in what I do, and, you know, I'm well trained, all of that, I work hard, and, you know, I'm skilled at what I do. I think the system resists that for black people on a pretty regular basis. There's some kind of way of saying that we are deficient in our craft, so I thought it was important because I had been saying, man, I certainly have seen individuals classified as white who are skilled and they know how to teach and have been practicing for a long, long time and have been teaching for a long, long time. And they're confident about doing that. However, I have also seen some white people who are not very skilled at all. Same thing, you know, the system of white supremacy where you can be white and get access to jobs and things like that. And you might not be that qualified. You might not be that skilled. They had the whole college admissions thing. And I say this explicitly because I haven't had an instructor. A lot of with yoga instructors, people don't know. You have to get certification, you know, to show that you have expertise. Like, it's great to have things on your resume. You did this, and you did a retreat, or you taught at this studio, or, you know, whatever, you've been teaching for this amount of time. But certification, you know, I'm 200 hours certified. I'm 500 hours certified. I'm prenatal certified, have a YIN certification, like getting these certifications, a lot of times that's a lot of money and it's a lot of time. Sometimes those certifications can take 6 months of you doing work, and you have to write papers and you have to take classes. It is a lot of work. I talked about that last summer when I was doing my 200-hour certification and my pre-lit. It is a lot of time and energy to get those certifications. Same thing like with the admission scandal. I talked to white people who said, well, I was doing my 500-hour certification and such a thing happened, and I wasn't able to finish. Now, this person may be marketing themselves as 500-hour certified, but they don't actually have that certification. And that's the same type of thing that I've talked about in many, many settings. Discretion, when it's something where a white person who's doing the hiring, where they might have discretion. I was talking about all kinds of background checks, all types of things, where there might be discretion. Are they looking the other way sometimes? Because I know with I can even say with my internship, this is not paid. This is not paid, not one, you know, nickel, not one dime for garbage. It was before we can start anything with the intern, I need to see your 200-hour certification. If you don't have that piece of paper to document, you're out. Now, that's why I said, if you're a white person and you don't have it, something happened and you didn't finish, you didn't get that piece of paper, are you able to use your words and get through that process? You know, do they have discretion? Is there some leeway? I don't know. Anyway. I have my 200-hour certification and scanned it, so I have a digital copy, and I have a hard copy just in case, cover my bases, and encourage folks to make sure you have any important work-related documents that you might need, scan them so that you have your backup copies just in case. So we get through all of that. As I said, we get to fast forward to Sunday. Boom, taught, hey, you know, you should apply. Be great, be paid to teach. You're doing a great job. So, okay. Before I finish the application, she plops the employee handbook in my hands. It is in a neat binder with a three-ring notebook, all printed out, graphs, the whole nine. I stop immediately at the whole application. If you're thinking about that, I get a very comfortable seat. I think, oh man, it is going to be a hoot for Friday's Workplace Racism. And I crack open that employee handbook. That is exactly the way that I say it should be done anytime you're applying for a job. I wouldn't care if it was, you know, to sell chicken sandwiches at Popeyes. Before we get to the chicken sandwiches, let me see the policy and procedure. Gotta know. If something happens, time off, if I get a chicken sandwich at my work, let me see the employee manual first. And then I'll decide if I even want to work here. That's the way things should be done. That way you get to, before you even sign the contract, what is this work environment? What am I signing up for? Do you have policy? Because, I mean, that's huge. We've heard people say they go to jobs and they don't even have a ready handmade policy and procedure that you can view. That right there lets you know the type of environment that you are potentially signing on to. I get myself a comfortable seat, and I slowly read the policy and procedures. And I mean, wow. I learned quite a bit, which is why I say you should read it. Sometimes it'll have good things. Like, oh, if you teach you, you get a free membership. You can practice anytime you want to. Oh, that's cool. That's like $150 value for a lot of studios. Like, oh, okay. And in addition to that, if you teach, a family member gets a free membership. Oh, wow, that's great. Somebody else out, like I said, $150 value. I wouldn't have known that if I had read. Okay, keep reading. Boom, boom, boom. They have a whole policy on social media. Oh, wait a minute, before I get to the social media policy. They have a policy on phone use and computer use. Get to social media later. They write in the policy that they may have access or they may listen in on phone conversations from time to time, quality assurance type thing. That is huge to know, and I think it is said pretty regularly on this broadcast, there should be no expectation of privacy in your workplace. You should speak all the time as though everyone in the organization, everyone who has ever been affiliated with the organization, is going to get a pristine transcript of exactly what you said the entire time that you worked. Your transcript, audio file, everything. I'd even have video too. That's the way that you should expect the environment here, especially now. It's 2020. Alexa and all of that, there's no expectation of privacy. It was, phone and computer. I already said the phone. That we have access to some phone calls. They said the same thing about the computer, emails, all of that. Same thing that I've said for years with that regard. I am not checking my email or doing anything on this computer except work-related. I might check the weather, and that's about it. Other than that, I'm not doing anything on this computer except work-related activities. I'll check my email or anything else when I get home, like nothing. Feel free. Check it all day long what I was doing at the computer. No problem with that at all. Social media policy. I read that one acutely. They basically, and especially this week with everything that happened with the Houston Rockets, I easily could have included that workplace racism as well, but it was a white person and, you know, the sidetrack. But I read it. I would encourage other people. Dr. Kanban, I think, has the best strategy. Delete your social media account entirely. Cause nothing happened in that group on Instagram, or you can still check it out. But you don't need your postings, all the rest of it. You don't need it. That's Dr. Kanban's advice, which I think is very sound, unless you need social media for your job, which is kind of the yoga industry, where you kind of need to be on social media a little bit, post pictures of you doing some cool poses every now and then. But be that as it may, their policy was basically they support people being able to post on social media, free speech and whatever they're doing, you know, as long as you're not harassing customers, giving away business secrets, bad-mouthing coworkers, that sort of thing. What happened with the Houston Rockets, no problem. Do whatever you're going to do, as long as you're not bad-mouthing employees, customers, giving away secrets, coworkers, that type of thing. As long as you're not doing that or engaged in criminal bad activity, do whatever you're going to do. On social media, I'm trying to think if anything else stood out from the policy and procedure aside from things that we generally talk about. Harassment, computer use, phone conversations. Those are most of the main things from policy and procedure. Oh, wait a minute. That you have to have CPR certification, which I knew already. They tell you that when you do your yoga teacher training. If you're going to teach most studios, most environments, you have to be CPR certified, which they offer at the fire department. If you can get there without urine being tossed on you or being called a nigger. And they actually just had CPR certification. I just found out about all this week. They have CPR certification at the fire department that is right near my residence, but they had it on the day that I found out about all this, so I wasn't able to sign up to go take it there. And they offer it for free, no less, which I was stunned about. But anyway, and she told me, I read the policy and procedure, and I said, oh, yeah, I've got to get that CPR certification. And that reminded me to ask. That's another reason that I would recommend policy and procedure, even if it's information that you already know, and it may prompt you to think about other things or prompt questions that you need answered, which should happen. There should be no way that you read a policy and procedure manual. I would give it 3 pages. There should be no way that you read it and have no questions, that you don't need anything clarified. I mean, if they got everything spelled out, if it's that clear, that exact, no ambiguity, great. But generally, you should have at least one question about something that's there, just make sure that you understand everything and know what you're signing up for. But that was one that prompted a question about the CPR training, and I went to ask, and she had lots of information, like, oh, they have programs where this is free, and then she even added on, like, oh, yeah, if you have to get the one where you have to pay, and it can be costly, or at least here, it can be costly. I don't know what it costs in other places, but the CPR certification, this part of Washington State can cost about $125, $100. I think the cheapest that I've seen for the class where you actually go and get the dummy and, you know, do the whole press on the chest thing. The cheapest I think I've seen is $80, I think. So it can't, I mean, in the world of yoga, that is low, given how much the certifications and things cost, but it can be, you know, a little bit pricey. She said, hey, I think it's you can find a class to pay for it. Let me know, and if everything goes well, we can cover the cost of your CPR training as well. I said, and white people have resources. They can get things done. And that all started just from reading the policy and procedure. But that, if I can get the CPR, that would be another reason why it was great to do the internship, get some things that will be helpful. I think that CPR certification is good, is valid for at least, I think, 2 to 3 years. So that would be grand, even if I moved along and did not. I think it's valid across the what they call country. So if I wanted to relocate to Montana, relocate to Florida, what have you, the CPR verification would still be good for 3 years. So always great to pick up certifications and things that will enhance your career as you're moving along. Try to be mindful in seeking out those opportunities, and you might have to do some digging and asking to seek out those type of opportunities that will help you refine your career, your craft. But do that, and the system of white supremacy frequently does a lot to ask us from doing those sort of things, but look for those types of opportunities. This will be, I think, a great opportunity for ongoing workplace racism, and I can see how my code applies in the workplace. I can say just from the class that I taught on Sunday, I've been talking frequently since I became a yoga instructor about the touching and not doing touching as an instructor, Bill Cosby. I taught a class this past Sunday, and there was a white woman on the corner. And I did put down cards this video. They have cards. I can flip them over. They have yes on one side and no on the other side. And so the students can just, you know, choose if they want to be touched or not. So I did put the cards down. But I had told the owner of the instructor, white woman, I had told her already that I was not doing any hands-on adjustments because I don't know anybody. We don't have rapport, so I'm not doing any of the touching. She said, oh, yeah, that's legit. No problem. So I did put the cards down, but I didn't do any touching. Now we got to the end of class, and they did, you know, feedback, what you like, what you better about the class, boom. And the white one says, oh, yeah, you didn't get any hands-on adjustments. I saw the card there. It was on the no side, and I flipped it over to yes. It's like I told you you've taken a hand-on adjustment. And it's just something about the way it was said. Like, it's like, no, Bill Cosby, I am good. I'm not doing hands-on adjustments for a while. Like, I'm going to keep my pause to myself. It is not going to be a Negro yoga instructor in Pacific Northwest indicted on charge of groping in class. Like, no, thank you. I'm keeping my hands to myself. I can use my words to cue and leave it at that. This has come up so many times. I've talked about this so many times as an instructor and all the pawing feeling that goes on. No thanks. But I will update as all of that goes on. Oh, the reference, that was what it felt like I was messing. One other component, making sure that you have references and all of that covered. I'm not sure if we discussed that previously. It was not, you know, major stress, like on a scale of 1 to 10, 1 being no stress at all, 10 being, you know, stressed to the point of insanity. You know, it was like a 2. So it was pretty low on the scales. But like, oh, wow, most of my references would be about hosting a radio program talking about racism or writing about racism and white supremacy, to actually have references about something that is not related to racism. It's like, wow, it did take me a few moments, and then even to say, I hope the people that can be referenced in a yoga context don't slip up and say things about racism as they are speaking about Gusty. That was, I got on a scale of 1 to 10, it was about a 2, but I didn't spend too much time straining over it. You know, I have said consistently there are no secrets in the system of racism, white supremacy. All of us should function in that manner. If white people really want to know about you, they can, you know, find out lots about you in the system of racism, white supremacy. So, no secrets. I've taken lots of yoga classes and very well known, infamous in Seattle yoga area, yoga t-shirt included. So I will let you all know I'm at the background check and reference stage. I even have a white female reference. In fact, my prenatal yoga instructor was gleeful about the prospect of being a reference for me. So I will let you all know how it goes. Maybe that it comes back and we get our background check and we've heard about you and your t-shirt. Get the hell out of here. That could happen. I will come back and report if, you know, things proceed. I will let you know how I'm able to adapt and refine my counter-racist code in this work environment, and especially around, you know, all of the hazards that it could present. But, wow. Workplace racism. Context of white supremacy. Policy and procedure is super important. Make sure you've read it cover to cover. And in addition to plopping that in my hands immediately before I fill out the application, she said, you can read it right now. They also won't need you to sign it. And they had a specific sexual harassment section as well that you have to read and sign. Already did that. She said, but you have it right here. You can read. I will send you an electronic copy as well so you can peruse at your leisure. Exactly what we talk about on the couch. You should ask, see if they have an electronic copy of the policy and procedures at your place of employment. That way you can have it at the ready whenever you might need it. Number again, 605-313-5164. The code 564-943-POUND. press *61 if you would like to participate. Now that I'm thinking of references, I am reminded of the... We just read Gavin DeBecker, The Gift of Fear. He was talking about references because he talks a lot about workplace environment and avoiding violence there and blah, blah, blah. But he talks about sifting out employees, people that you don't want. And he was talking about references. And he said one of the questions that he asked was to list like people that you're close to, some of your really good friends. And he said that if you didn't list them as a reference, why not? Now, I thought that was curious because I would never think, or I had not thought of just listing friends, people that you're close to that are maybe outside of a work context. Maybe me and this person get along, we've known each other a long time, but we have not necessarily worked together. This person hasn't hired me, we haven't been co-workers at a place specifically. I hadn't thought of that, but he said, hey, that would stand out to you if you said this person is a good friend, and then you don't list them as a reference to speak to your character and why you would be a good hire. I would think, well, I'll even ask that. Do you all use friends as references if you've worked together, or even if you haven't worked together? Do you cite friends as references? Just asking. And I would say try to set up so that you can cite people that you do have quality relationships as references. If that means you all do volunteer work or doing other projects together, so that it can be, yes. We have worked together, and this person can speak to having worked with me in a professional capacity so that I know, bam, I got this person, reliable reference, and you can go about the business of setting up other references on the job and that sort of thing. But so that can be super helpful, especially if you have to be out of the work environment for some time so you not have an employment gap, being able to have friends that you can use as a reference. Can be super helpful. People have any tips on ways of making sure that you have references at the ready? And I think I ended up having like 5 or 6 of them. Like it was more than I recalled having at some time. But if folks have tips, making sure that you have those references, reliable references at the ready, you can share about that as well. The number again, 605-313-5164, the code 564-943-#. Press *61 if you would like to participate. Not for spectators. Now, the first few folks who dabbed in, not dialed in. I guess recalling also if you have any experience with children being on the job, bosses' children, other white co-workers' children being on the job and having to navigate that, if folks have a code around that type of situation, please share. I'm trying to go through my work experience. I don't think I've dealt with that directly in the workplace. I don't think.
Can I be heard?
Greetings, retired firefighter. Yes, sir.
Yes, greetings, Gus. Ever since you started talking, the program, your voice and everything is severely garbled, and also there's a real bad echo. I mean, ever since you started talking on the program, it's been that way. Just wanted to let you know that. I mean, I've been waiting for about 30 minutes. You know, because I'm listening. I was following the program all the way through, and then as soon as you started talking, it started getting very garbled and a huge echo, very very inaudible. I can hear you every now and then on what you're saying, but it's severely compromised.
Let's see. It's still not okay.
Now you're loud and clear.
Oh, okay. Wish I had checked it before. That's unpleasant. Had so many workplace antics this year. I'll have to double check the recording to see. I'm not sure if something happened right when we went ready to go live, because I was listening to the...
I mean, literally, since you started talking, that's when it came on. It's almost like it was timed.
Maybe it was. Not sure. Man, I don't... don't really want to recap everything, especially if the recording is all right, then folks that listen to the archive will be able to understand the first portion of what was said. For the folks that dialed in and are listening, man, that's uncool. that you all weren't able to
hear. I heard you say something about CPR.
Yeah.
He was talking about it.
The first portion, I started off with the audio clips. If folks were able to hear those, we started off with the audio clips where I was discussing the Supreme Court cases. They're looking at LGBTQ rights and just contrasting the depth of the coverage that they offered there with these individuals that I suspect are white. Saying that they're having all these troubles with their job and or losing a job in the workplace. I think I was talking about the one white person who said that they spent 8 months writing a letter. They're transgender. They were male. Now they're going to be female. And they spent 8 months writing a letter to explain this to their employees. That is a bit much information for me. We had all of that, and that's being addressed at the Supreme Court, where they're contrasting the so-called LGBTQ issues with racism, because they're using the 1967 civil rights case. That, and then the instances of firefighter racism. I was saying I don't recall NPR having reports where they talk about black people suffering in that manner. The firefighter in Orlando, they had a white man. He was accused of calling his black firefighter coworker a nigger, and he was able to get his job back. He was demoted, and he got his rank back and everything, saying he was fat shamed, that the black guy was talking about his weight at first, saying he was eating dessert first, and the white guy said, well, I let the niggers eat first, and saying that, you know, just having a code for that sort of thing, and this white people being able to turn it around and be the victim, and say that we were all just, you know, being a little, he was joshing with me, joking with me, got me upset. I'm sensitive about my weight. And then he was able to get his job back and everything. The second report on the Lafayette Mercedes-Benz, just said briefly with that one, there was a black guy. He had a lawsuit filed, said that he faced retaliation in workplace racism. They were calling him nigger. He said that he had the boss's child. They didn't mention the age, but the boss's child would come and make racist jokes about him being black. And then his white boss would brag about selling black people cars at an inflated price. And I thought both of those were important. I asked if people had a code for white people bringing their children to the job. People had developed any sort of code around that, as well as the importance of this white man not only practicing racism against the black employees there, but then bragging about selling black people Mercedes and these so-called luxury vehicles at prices higher than what he would sell to white people. Another reason for us to be frugal and not waste a whole lot of time and energy trying to acquire white people's things, white people's shiny, expensive things. And then from that, I was just talking about, or I did read the report from the Washington Post, where they were talking about the Rooney Rule in New York and trying to get, I think it was more than 50 companies to adopt some form of the Rooney Rule. I know retired firefighter knows what that is in terms of we're going to interview some black employees or not. Oh, no, that's not what they said. They said that we're going to interview women and minorities. So it might not necessarily be black people. It could be lots of white women and LGBTQ people and transgender and all the rest of it. So, but
correct.
That was New York. And they said this was, you know, about $200 billion worth of contracts. And, you know, we don't want it to just be old white men on the boards in high paying positions. I did read that report. And then I was just talking about my yoga internship where it's supposed to be a 3-month internship, not for money. And 1 month in, they asked me to apply for a job to get paid. And before I even got the application, I was presented with a very nicely collated policy and procedure manual. So I stopped immediately and read the policy and procedure. I just talked about some of the details they included in the manual. About how they have access to the phone to listen. They have access to the computer to listen, just again, solidifying workplace is not a private environment and the importance of reading the policy and procedure so that you are informed about where you're going to be, the environment that you're going to be in the workplace. Yeah, that's the very abbreviated version of the recording, again, hopefully the, of what I just said, hopefully the recording will be a little bit better. And then questions I asked specifically if people, because I talked about references, and I was joking a little bit saying that it was challenging for me to come up because I needed about 5 or 6, and it was a little bit challenging on a scale of 1 to 10, 10 being super difficult, 1 being easy. It was about a 2, maybe 3. Saying, whoa, I hope I can come up with 5 to 6 references who, in a yoga context, can say constructive things that do not relate to white supremacy racism. That was a slight challenge, but, and I was saying if, people, are able to, or do people use their so-called friends as references? And I was remembering Gavin DeBecker's book where he did say that that's a question he asks. If someone says that this is my really good friend or this is my really good friend, and they don't list this person as a reference, why not? He said that's a question he asks of potential employees. And so I was asking, do people, you know, have any tips on making sure you have references, reliable, constructive references ready to go? If you, you know, were going to apply for a job or something, how to develop those? Do you use your friends? If not, and I was suggesting even finding ways where you and your friends can work together, even if it's a side project, a limited project, find ways where you all can do that. That way, your friends, you all have worked in a business context, and they would be a great work reference. That's kind of a brief summation of what I touched on while the audio was not working.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that Rooney Rule was very unclear on purpose to do what it has been doing. As you mentioned, there's a very broad scope of who actually would get interviews, because that's the only thing they get. They guarantee is a certain amount of interviews, let alone talking about on who gets hired. For instance, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers have 2 female coaches. We're talking about the top level of a employment level, and there's 2 white women who are assistant coaches for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Now, black males for a long time have dominated the sport as players. People, and most times, which is traditional, is that most of the coaches, overwhelmingly, people who coach football, I would dare say, all sports, they played the sport. And we know that these white females did not play football with males. Yeah, it's very few that do. And I'm pretty sure I would be bold enough to guess that neither one of them played football with males. And you know, so it's broad like that, so they can still pick and choose on who and what they want. There is no, a lot of jobs have requirements. In other words, something like, you know, you have to have a high school education, a college education, blah, 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 whatever certifications. There's no such thing like that with coaching at all. You can hire somebody off of the Little League 95-pound playing field to coach in the NFL as a head coach, if theoretically, if you wanted to. It's that broad, you know, as opposed to some jobs, if they don't have the credentials behind them, sitting behind them up on the wall, such as an attorney, then you're not going to hire that person as an attorney or a doctor or a teacher, you know, that sort of thing. But as a coach, you know, on just about any sport, really, there's no qualifications for it, no standards that you have to go through at all.
Yep, that discretion where you would have a lot more latitude. It's not like you got to have, you know, 8 years and a PhD to coach football or basketball, any of the professional sports, really, unless I've been misinformed. I think that was why when they had what they're calling the Rich Paul rule with the NCAA, even though that's not the name of it, but saying that agents for athletes, this is NCAA, saying that if you're going to be an agent to represent these college athletes that are trying to go play professionally, you have to have a degree. And you have to have passed a test. They just came out with this rule. But they didn't even have that before. Like, to be an agent, you didn't even have to have, you know, those qualifications. And that's not a whole lot. Like, I don't know what's on the exam. I might be overstating. I haven't taken it, and I don't know what's on it. So it might be really, really difficult to pass that exam. That does happen sometimes where they try to make things more exclusive. It might be something where it's really expensive. It might be both. But a four-year degree, that doesn't seem like, you know. And again, you had the whole cheating scandal. So, I mean, for white people, that's certainly nothing too difficult. But white people do that under the system of racism, white supremacy, where sometimes they'll put credentials and certifications to make it difficult for black people, non-white people to get employment. And then in some fields, they don't even have all those obstacles and they still don't give the jobs to black people. I think that's a great point
you mentioned
as well about there are white women. In not just the NFL and the NBA as well, who have coaching jobs, and not just some of the coaching jobs and training jobs and other jobs within the franchise, but job telecasting and hosting all the programs and doing the sideline work, is tons of white women who have those jobs who do not have any expertise, certainly didn't play those sports, where you have tons of athletes who are down and out, retired, no money. They could easily get that job, get them out there. Hey, you play this, get out there and, you know, do these little rinky dink jobs that can be your little pension plan. They could easily do that. No, they would be overqualified.
I'm looking at it. Yes, sir. I'm looking at a game right now with the sound turned down. Of course, University of Miami is playing, and their head football coach just 10 years ago was a high school kid that wasn't even a very good football player. He's the head football coach of the University of Miami. Now, mind you, just about all of these student athletes that he's coaching, that he has a platform to be able to share with them more than just football. They were coached by a lot of black males, including myself, who wouldn't turn down the job if asked to apply, and you know, that's sort of, they would want the job at all, and they give it to a guy who barely was good enough to make his high school football team, and then all of a sudden went from that to a prestigious job at the University of Texas, which is far more vast than University of Miami. And now he's the head football coach of University of Miami. And I would just like to question anybody to go figure that out. Other than it was something, some sort of disadvantage on the behalf of many black males who are qualified and who would have desired, if asked, or at least it was open for them to apply for that job, head coach as well as the assistants.
Context of white supremacy, certainly with all of the black males specifically who have played football in the state of Florida and University of Miami's storied football program, I am sure they could go nab, you know, a few Miami Hurricane alumni. And hey, you want to come coach? Let's help, you know, resurrect the program, put it back where it was in the glory days. Woo, they could do that. That's not what this is about. And that is pretty consistent in the system of racism, white supremacy. While so bummed about the audio, because I did have one day where I had my own workplace racism, talking about some of my situations to have the audio situation, but making do. One of the folks who listens in, he emailed a comment. We talk so much about these so-called workplace pranks, when white people are playing some sort of game or joke on somebody, put that in quotes, on somebody in the workplace, on me saying consistently, you do not want to be involved in any of this. Try to get a reputation for just being serious about my work. A listener, he emailed in a report and has the sexiest, funniest coworker office pranks of all time. It has all these pictures of just ridiculous things that whites presumably have done in the workplace. It's got one where they have, it looks like, taped a foghorn underneath the chair, so when you sit in it, it'll, you know, blast. And just, you know, some of the stuff looks like it would have taken more than 5 to 10 minutes to set this thing up. Like, how much work time and energy was lost in carrying out these pranks and things, where we could have been, you know, sending some emails off, getting prepared for a meeting, calling a client, like lots of things that we could have been doing in the time that we were wasting with this sort of nonsense. I would try and point that out as well. When you're about being serious and being about work while you're there, are we wasting time? Is this hurting our productivity? Is this hurting the bottom line? Don't be about pranks in the workplace. Let's see.
Could I briefly speak on that, Gus?
Oh, that for sure, retired firefighter.
Yes, sir. One thing that the fire department provides is an environment, and it still is a work environment, but it's very social. A work environment where you can just sit around in between calls and observe. And one of the main things I observed is that what traps a lot of non-white black people is it seemed as though before they got on that job, they had some issues and problems with being accepted. You're okay, Donnell. You're okay, Keisha. You are adequate. Just put your time and energy towards something. A lot of us don't get that. So what takes place on a job like the fire department, we go looking for it on that job, unfortunately. I've witnessed that too many times to even speak about. I was talking with Thomas this afternoon about the very subject. And in turn, the racist white supremacists, they know this because they are the creators of that particular psychological behavior that we bestow, and they take advantage of it and use it. And through those pranks or those quote unquote jokes, that sort of thing, they are instituting in a sophisticated manner racist behavior, racist activity, with the idea in mind of knowing that non-white person is probably going to accept it. It's probably going to accept it. And like Mr. Fuller said, they get it's fun. It's just fun to them. And the status that they elevate themselves to is attractive also. And I've observed that too much. Every now and then they come in contact with somebody like the attitude that I had, you know, as far as they're concerned. And I never fed into it. But for the most part, from my observations, they've been, you know, there's enough quote unquote damaged clientele for them to spread out, for them to take advantage of. Those are some of my very thoughts on that subject. Thank you.
Much obliged, retired firefighter. Context of white supremacy. Number again, 605-313-5164, the code 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. Hopefully we won't have any more audio difficulties for the remainder of the broadcast. Much obliged for folks' perseverance. I guess I had a couple questions. Make sure I repeat them. hopefully being heard without difficulty this time. The one was, if folks have any experience, suggestion, if you codified, if you work in a job and your employer or coworkers are bringing their children to the workplace, have you codified, you know, how you function, if they're going to be in the environment, what to say, do you talk to them at all, just how you function to make sure that that doesn't produce any difficulties, and then references, making sure that you have them at the ready. And if you use so-called friends as a reference, remembering Gavin DeBecker did talk about that specifically. *61, if you have thoughts, suggestions, or if you have problems, observations from your workplace you would like to share. Let's see, I'll read a workplace racism report. I see if folks have any thoughts they want to share. This is from Kizzy's cousin. Last week, I reported that a racist suspect female was displaying a racist tic, unconsciously divulging that she was practicing deception and terrorism against me. You talked about the insidiousness of someone asking you if you are okay whilst knowing they are plotting against you. This made me reanalyze my interpretation of what was happening, and I conclude you are correct. Whilst her questioning betrayed her racist antics, she was taking pleasure in asking me if I was okay several times over, at the same time undermining me. I've experienced this from other race soldier females, but they might vary it to suit the situation. Examples. Number one, I was working on a project and was under attack from several racist suspects, male and female. There had been some unjust networking, so another racist suspect female at a partner company, who I did not know at the time, was about to be fired from her job, came to me and said, "I hear you are leaving." I was not, and she knew this. It was an attempt to unsettle me. She was also making other attempts to undermine me, but didn't get very far, and she was let go anyway. Number two. A very similar situation happened again more recently. A racist suspect female who has worked for the same organization for years but has probably spoken to me twice stopped me in the corridor. I suspect there was some unjust networking taking place, so she was aware I was under attack. Again, she said she had heard I was leaving. I said no. She then walked away without saying another word. Not even to explain why she had approached me and hasn't spoken to me since. Number three, I was on secondment to another team. We were at a team away day. I don't even get those team away days. Like, man. And a racist female in the new team approached me during the break and said, "Do you think your old team will keep your job for you?" Again, trying to unsettle me and make me leave the secondment early. I understood their tactics, but it could have been very easy and understandable for me as a non-white victim to panic and become stressed by these acts of terrorism. Summary of racist antics for the week. Number one, the saboteur continues to try and block me from attending meetings and undermining my ability to carry out the job I'm employed to do. She attempted to act as a go-between me and a partner company, even though I am the lead. She has unjustly networked, and they exclude me from communications about scheduled meetings. When I questioned it, she said she would contact them to let them know I will also be at the meeting. I emailed them myself and copied her in. Great use of email. Number two, I was chairing another meeting this week. The saboteur and a very confused non-white female were sat next to me. We had someone from another team present on a project, after which they left the room. The saboteur and non-white female decided to start a separate conversation, disrupting the meeting. I had to ask them to stop three times. The role of chair is rotated, so there is a different person who leads the meeting each week. This is the first time that there has been any disruption of the meeting. That's not fun. Apologize for laughing, Kizzy's cousin, but like I won't even call it subtle, but like the flagrant disregard, because there are like so many examples of black people, and it's not even that they're in charge. Like, they just have these little tacky meetings. She said it rotates. It's not like you get, you know, I don't think you get a bonus in salary. She didn't say that. A bonus in salary because you chaired the meeting that week. You don't get an extra donut because you chaired the meeting that week. I don't think. Please write that in, Kizzy's cousin, if you got an extra donut for chairing the meeting. I don't think that's the case. But just something that tacky and small, like, and put the nigger in charge. We're going to talk. I'm not even going to listen. Where are we going for lunch today? And just sit over and chat the whole time. Like, you know, can we get through what is it? Tacky, terroristic, does not get any better than tacky. I was going to say trifling, but I don't think that's Mr. Fuller's three T's. Tacky, terroristic. I've been saying trifling so much that has become the three T's for me. Tacky, trifling, terroristic. Trashy, that's his. Trashy. I say trifling more frequently than I say trashy, but all the same. That is not funny, but undermining black people when they appear. Because we've had other black people when they said they were in charge of a meeting, same type of scenario. And the person who's in charge, quote unquote, of the meeting, they're supposed to sit, you know, in front of the room or at the front of the table, whatever it is. So the people are looking at you. You're in charge. Lead us through the meeting so we can get this and get back to our desk and do, you know, nonsense. And they know, oh, the nigger is in charge today. I'm going to go sit up in her chair. Yeah. Not going to let the nigger have the head chair. That's all you can say. I mean, it's so tacky. It's so tacky and racist. Like, you don't do this any other time. And it just bothers you that much to pretend that this nigger is in charge. It bothers you. Gets under your skin, as they say. Get all my metaphors out today. Interrupted. Getting back. Chairing the meeting. Boom, boom, boom. Oh, yes, they disrupted. Finally, one more from my recruitment archives. I was on a recruitment training today organized by my employer. So much racism was practiced in the session that I will need to spread this report out over a few weeks. That's painful. Staff wanting to improve their recruitment skills sign up to practice interviews. Recruiting managers are trained to follow the company hiring procedures. The quid pro quo is that feedback is provided to the staff wanting to practice their skills. One of the candidates was a non-white black male. I believe he was on an interim contract, as I haven't seen him for a while, but I could be wrong. Candidates are provided with verbal feedback at the end of the practice interview, but he had also asked the trainer if he could have written feedback, which was relayed to the panel. The panel was made up of four people, two males and two females. I was the only non-white member. People indicated that they were happy to provide written feedback. The trainer, racist suspect male, said that we should not do it as the candidate is very talkative and we'll never get rid of him. He also told us not to give the candidate his scores for each question. Wow. Is that standard protocol? There was no reason for this other than to practice racism. Wow. The candidate's responses were so good, he was scoring 4 and 5. The highest score is 5. He was nervous, which would possibly have made him lose marks if it was a real situation. However, he has no need to worry about his answers, as he clearly has the knowledge and experience, so the feedback on his scores would have been so beneficial. The trainer successfully convinced the panel not to give him... What a disgrace! What a disgrace. I saw him later on... I saw him later on and gave him the information. He was very grateful. Bravo, black self-respect for Kizzy's cousin. We have so many listeners who really make an effort to do that in the workplace, to try to help out other black people, other victims of racism where they can, where it's not going to cause other problems. And that, to me, this goes exactly. My audio was not working again. I hope the archives, it will have recorded when I was talking about my yoga situation, because that was one component that I mentioned, that confidence, I think, so frequent, because she just him being nervous. I don't think it's that major of a request. Is it possible that I could get written feedback so that if the whole purpose of this is, hey, I'm still learning, I'm trying to get better, it's asking too much for you to write a couple sentences down? I can improve. I thought that's what all this was about. Oh, no. This nigger is talkative. He'll never shut up. We're not doing that. And we're not going to give him his scores. And is that standard operating procedure? I would want to know that. Like the other candidates, did they get the the scores for them. I mean, that's like going above and beyond to deny constructive information, which was what this was all about. Give me the feedback so I can get better going out and doing my... What a disgrace. But that's what I said at the beginning. Non-white people, black people in particular, in my view, they totally erode black self-respect. You are not allowed to be confident and competent. Now, just from what I'm reading, she says that this fellow, black male, hey, he has the expertise. You can see it. He knows his stuff. He has given all the answers. He should not be nervous at all. Go in there, put your suit on, put your feet up, and just boom, you got it. You are brilliant. Just go in there and do your thing. Don't even worry about it. You'll be great. No, you don't get to be that in the system of racism, white supremacy. It's what? That's exactly what Calvin Lawrence said. Hey, he's in Canada. Hey, you go in here, you're great, you do hard work, you'll be. Disgust. A competent black male? That's what he said. A hardworking, competent black male? Ugh, God, we don't want you around here. Get out of here. And that's what they said. Ugh, we don't want him. He'll be here forever. Let's get him out of here. Get him out of here. Yeah. Can't have your school. Just get out of here. Get out. Hurry up. As opposed to if he had been a white candidate who had been, and imagine that, if that had been a white woman or a white man had come in, hey, is it possible that I could get written feedback? Went up, gave his, you know, went through the whole ritual, gave his responses, nervous, but gave all these great. Don't you think they would? Oh, my goodness, you were so good. Just be confident. Speak up. That's the sort of feedback that they, unless I'm in total error. I think that's the type of feedback that they would have gotten. Not we're going to conceal information and hope that we can hurry up and get this person the hell out of the office. I don't think that's the way that they would have responded at all. I could be wrong. Number again, 605-313-5164. The code 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. Again, if you have any experience with your coworkers bringing their children to work and how you deal with that, that definitely would be a good one to share. Much obliged. Let's see. Traptomania should be with us. If you have suggestions or your own situation, proceed.
Hi, guys. Can you hear me?
Yes, ma'am.
Oh, hi, guys. And yes, and fellows and listeners. I just wanted to respond. Well, first, well, I wanted to say congratulations on your future job. I'm quite sure you're going to get the position. And, you know, I think it's going to be great for you to be doing something that you enjoy doing. A lot of people do not have an opportunity to do work that they enjoy doing. So, you know, based on what you've been discussing throughout the program, I know that you really enjoy doing the yoga practice. So I think that's a very good opportunity for you. And I hope you do, you know, get the position. And I wish you the best in that capacity. And I wanted to just respond to your question in regards to using references. I recently had to use some references for a job that I'm trying to apply for, the position that I'm working at now. I'm trying to get it permanently. And I've always used a friend. Yes, I used this friend. And actually, he was contacted and he gave me feedback on what was said. So it was just, you know, actually, this just happened on Friday, last Friday, that he was contacted. So, yes, I do. I use this particular friend, although, you know, it's not work-related, but it's a friend. I've known him for a long time. So there's nothing wrong with using a friend as a reference. As long as you can maybe use one friend and maybe a couple of work references, maybe a supervisor or what have you. But, yeah. Friends, there's nothing wrong with using friends. They, you know, they should work Yeah, that's basically what I wanted to just share, my my experience in regards to that, because I just went through that experience recently, and I will give feedback in regards to the update, in regards to what happened, in regards to the outcome of the position also. I'm quite sure you will be giving us feedback also as far as what's going to happen in regards to the position that you applied for. And that's really all I have to share at this time. And thank you for allowing me to share.
Much obliged, Draptomania. Best of luck. Hope you get a massive raise with the permanent position. No probationary period or any craziness like that. Massive raise and lots of training opportunities so you can just keep moving right on up the ladder, as they say. Yes, give us the update about your situation, and I definitely will let folks know as, you know, what happens with the whole procedure and opportunities to adapt and do some learning, my own workplace racism code. So I'll be able to share quite a bit, hopefully, on a regular basis. Let's see. Other folks who dialed. Oh, and with the friends. That's I would encourage people. See if you can find ways. If it's really, you know, you have a black person, non-white person, and you all have a quality relationship, you all don't do a lot of griping and arguing. You all tend to do constructive things. You talk about constructive things. See if there's an opportunity where you all can work together. It can be in a limited capacity. It doesn't have to be, you know, full time. Doesn't mean that you all are going into business and that sort of thing. It can be on a small scale. But just that alone, where you all do have work experience, where that could be listed. Oh, we did, you know, this project, it was for a year or it was for 6 months. And, you know, we did this, 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 and this, and, you know, whoopee, grand. And like I said, that is, we are working in a professional capacity. That could even be added on that I've known this person for, you know, such and such amount of years, but we've actually worked together and I can vouch for their professionalism, and they meet deadlines, they're serious, they do what they say they're going to do, and blah, 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 and all the rest. But I mean, hey, if you can find ways where you all can work together in a business capacity, spectacular. I was able to do that because one of my pals actually is a certified yoga instructor. So we were able to do some working together around yoga this summer. So, I mean, find different ways where you all can structure those type of programs. Might even challenge you to think of concepts, ways where you could make that happen. That's something I know I wouldn't have been thinking about before. Like if he had come 2 years ago and said, hey, let's do a yoga program, I would have been like, what? Trying to, you know, get these potato chips and watch television. Other folks who dialed in, if you have comments, questions, if you have any experience with white people bringing their children to the workplace, how to deal with that, that would be grand as well. If you dialed in with thoughts to share, proceed. While folks are taking time, I cannot emphasize policy and procedure. So many times on the program, when things come up, policy and procedure could probably be mentioned every single time with an incident, making sure that they don't have a policy already stated about how they are supposed to handle certain situations in the workplace. Critical to make sure that they're doing what they are supposed to do. And like I said, you can find lots of information. This was not a pattern. This was not a part of my workplace operating procedure at the beginning of my work career. Didn't matter what type of job it was. I don't ever remember getting a job and sitting down in detail and like with great interest, like, wow, this is really going to be of some benefit to me. Like I should really read this with some zeal. Like I do not remember that at all. And I guarantee you, if you sit down and read it, you will find all kinds of great information that is of benefit to you would be great. And like I said, if you can just, if it's a big one, obviously, where I suspect if you are working at a yoga studio, as opposed to if you are working, you know, for the New York City Post Office main branch, I suspect their policy and procedure manual might be a little bit bigger. You can take, you know, 2 weeks. I say you should read it before you sign the job. So, you know, that might impact things, but you should read it from cover to cover. If it's big and it's something that's going to take multiple days, hey, I will take this home, fill out the application, send it back, and I am reading this. If it takes me a week, whatever, I sit down and I read a little bit every day. Read it in its entirety. A lot of times white people will have just wild information. Sometimes it'll just be resources, things that employees have access to that you wouldn't know unless somebody told you or unless you read the handbook. Read the policy and procedure. Lots of information. And you should have at least one question when you read one thing, just to make sure that you understand correctly, that, you know, you have not missed something from the policy. Let's see. Other folks who dialed in, again, not a broadcast for spectators. For other folks who dialed in, if you are having no issues in the workplace, please, we beg of you, let us know, how did you accomplish that? How are you getting through your day without urine being thrown in your workspace, your beverage, white children not coming in and calling you a spear chucker and a coon? How did you do that? Let us know. 605-313-5164, the code 564-943-pound. Press star 61. If you would like to participate, caller at 3098 should be with us as well.
Good evening, Mandy Hurt.
Yes, sir.
All right. Good evening, Gus. Good evening, callers and participants. Hope everybody's having a constructive evening. To answer the direct question, I do use my friends as reference, and I encourage them to use me as a reference as far as when they apply for jobs and such. My reason is, like I said, if you say it as reference, I can attest to their character, and I would hope they would be able to attest to mine. As far as children in the workplace, I take that on a case by, I guess, case by case basis. It depends on the demeanor of the child and how they react and portray themselves in the workplace. So I've had that situation. I've actually, where a previous job where I had to interact with the children quite frequently, where they were, I was quite friendly with them and they were friendly with me, so I didn't have any problem. They were white children. And actually, in retrospect, I think probably I shouldn't have, but that's what I did. I was friendly with them as far as they were as friendly with me. I would reciprocate whatever energy they put forward. I did have a question. I'm looking for suggestions because this is actually something that's happening now, so I had to take some time to write it down. So if you bear with me, I'll read the situation and listen for any suggestions and advice that anybody would have. I'm looking for suggestions on diffusing, deflecting further conflict between two white non-white males and myself, one of whom is the so-called supervisor. The supervisor refused to pay the other non-white male a bonus OT for the day. The supervisor had told the other male that none of the workers would not receive the extra pay, but the supervisor did indeed sign off on the extra pay. The non-white supervisor stated later, when the subject arises, he had a rational reason at the ready and seemed to not be concerned. Later in the day, after the shift, the non-white male who was denied the bonus and who I partnered with often called me and questioned me about the situation. specifically if the supervisor had signed off on a bonus. I was purposely evasive. He then contacted another worker who was on the site to question her. I do not know her response. My question is, how should I best respond to any further query for the non-white male who denied the bonus, that does not cause additional conflict? Thank you. I'll mute my line.
Much obliged for your question. Sorry you are in that predicament. So you do have information, make sure I understood correctly, you do have information that this white man denied the overtime pay for this non-white supervisor, but he did approve the overtime pay for the other employees. Do you have like direct evidence that yes, that did happen? He did do that.
Yes. Let me clarify. It was the supervisor is non-white, or who I believe he would be classified as non-white, and the worker who I am partner with, he's also non-white.
Okay, gotcha.
So he denied them. He denied them, but paid everybody else.
Gotcha.
And he stated it wasn't personal, but I don't know. Now in retrospect, I think it's something personal issue. So I want to know how to best not cause any further conflict.
Thank you for clarifying. I thought it was a white supervisor, not a white supervisor, non-white supervisor. Got it. And non-white worker who's being denied overtime pay. Got it. It's challenging because generally system of racism, white supremacy, if it's a non-white person, victim of racism, and they're asking for constructive information, especially if it's like relevant pertaining to them, if I have that information, I try to give it to them. I think that's reasonable, given the system of white supremacy does so much to withhold. Kizzy's cousin, she just said, black fella comes in asking for his scores and they won't even do that, won't even give him written feedback. So, I mean, that's such a common procedure that, you know, I try not to be a part of that. However, I can totally grasp not wanting to be involved in this if you're not the one in the decision-making process. Like, it wasn't me who denied the loan, and, you know, you need to talk to him. And it's, you know, all non-white people. I can grasp not wanting to be involved. And that might even make it worse. Like, you know, him saying that, and then if he pulls you into it and that sort of thing. So, yeah, that's challenging. United Independent, generally it's focused on you and problems concerning you. This where one victim is having a dispute with another victim about compensation, I would probably be trying to do my best to avoid. Because it seems like that would just, I just don't see how that would make the situation any better. You being involved, voluntarily so, or telling this person, the employer who's trying to get his overtime pay, telling him your speculation about what happened. And I just don't see how that would, I don't think that would make the situation any better. Does any of the folks that are listening, they have any suggestions? If make sure I got it. So it's a non-white supervisor, non-white subordinate. Non-white subordinate, I guess, thought, was under the impression he was going to get overtime pay. It was denied. But the supervisor, who is non-white, approved overtime pay for all the other employees, just not for this non-white worker. Seems like it could be something personal. Now the employee is coming to speak to our caller and others, trying to figure out what's going on, and obviously being upset, or at least I would be, about not being funded. How would you deal with this? Would you, I guess, share additional information? What would you do if you were our caller being approached by the employee in this situation?
Can I be heard?
retired firefighter?
I could be wrong about this, but what I'm thinking that I would do is to collect all of my facts that would support me getting paid and go to the person that is over him with the case.
Is that an option, I guess, the caller? Is that something that would even be feasible to go to a more powerful person with the information that you have about, you know, why the overtime was approved and denied with some discretion, apparently?
Yes, that would be an option, but I think, in my view, would cause further problems. So I'm trying to not cause further problems for anybody else that comes at the work site, and is going to cause, I think that would cause further work, that would cause further scrutiny of the work site. I mean, it is an option, but I think, and that's what I'm trying, I think that's what I'm trying to avoid.
Is this something, I guess I'm trying to think of, if it's not going to talk to a more powerful white person, is this something where you could speak to, I don't know if y'all have that sort of rapport, where you could speak to him directly about this to, I guess, get a better grasp of why he didn't or denied the overtime pay and what can be done?
I do. I think, I don't know if I have a good rapport. I think I have a good enough rapport there where I can speak to him, the supervisor, directly, because he's, because I'm, strangely enough, he's been speaking to me because I'm actually finally up for my promotion. I think, wow, this is 2 years ago when I first called in and I was having issues with the promotion, but they finally, I've taken my medical for the promotion, so I'm just waiting for the start of the class. So I've spoken to him about, matter of fact, let me add additional context. He's actually questioned me about what would I do in this situation, and I told him I had no ready answer. Now I would want to ponder upon that. This is the supervisor speaking to me, so I'm not sure if I want to approach it, and I don't want to. I think I would have to approach him and speak to him. I think that would probably be the best way to go about it.
Oh, I was assuming that you spoke to the person directly already. That was my assumption, because yes, of course. I mean, I would go to that very person with my facts first.
But
you know, right. had you hadn't done it prior to it, and then I would go to, if I didn't get satisfaction, then I would go to the person that's beyond him.
I'll think on that.
Context of white supremacy. That is challenging. I generally, like I said, don't like having, because now I'm having to come in and intervene on a pay situation with another employee about why they didn't get this overtime pay. But I mean, yeah, if you all have, yeah, that's, that is, but I certainly advocate, you know, doing the correct thing. If he should have got the overtime pay and then he's not getting it, then, you know, we should be doing the correct thing by victims of racism. But wow, to, man, we have to fight and scrap to get a raise or to get some sort of constructive rating for your annual review or biannual review or whatever it is. And wow, now I got to go in here and be a part of grappling and tussling for somebody else's overtime pay. Like, wow, that is. Am I going to get a raise for this, or do I get an extra nickel or anything for this? Did any other folks have recommendations for this? That is a tough one. I'd be curious to hear what Mr. Fuller had to say on this one. Like, wow.
Yeah, thank you for the suggestion. I'll be sure to call on his see if I can get a call on his show.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's because it was hot. Like I said, I know if I, pardon my laughter, it's because it's a serious situation. I'm trying to follow the 10 basic stops. I'm trying not to have black people squabble with each other and expecting white supremacists to settle the affair. So that's the one premise I'm looking at. And I know, you know, just based on, because like I said, as I stated, I partner with him often. So I'm actually partnered with him tomorrow. So I know this conversation is going to come up. So I know I'm trying to get a codified response to get him to not escalate and cause further problems. So this is very challenging, very, very challenging. I knew I had to call in for.
I guess I would maybe let him know that if you think, you know, if you all are going to be working together tomorrow and he's probably still going to be frustrated about this, you can, you know, tell him it might be difficult, but if he can try to be patient, at least for, I try to overshoot with things like that, to give yourself like double the time that you think it'll actually take. So, you know, just for example, if you think tomorrow's Saturday, so if you think, okay, it might take Wednesday for me to have a meeting, then I would say it's going to take a week. You know, if you can be patient for a week because his schedule is full, and, you know, it might be Thursday or Friday before I get to talk to him. So, you know, if you can wait a week and then, you know, hey, if I'm able to talk to him Monday, then whoopee. I said a week and hey, we were able to knock this out on Monday. But I would try to give myself substantially more time than I think I will need, and asking him to be patient. And, you know, I'll try and talk to him and see if we can help resolve this, but just try to be patient. Exactly what you said. You know, we want to try to solve this in a way that doesn't make things worse. And hopefully gets those extra nickels in your pocket where everybody's happy and we can move forward with no problems. But yeah, if you're going to see him, I would just tell him that, like, yeah, I'm been thinking about this, and I'm going to try and see if I can talk to him, see if we can find a way to solve this and get you those nickels. Can't make any promises, but if you can just be patient with me for a week, boom, we'll see if we can make this situation right and go from there. Yeah, I always like solving problems where you don't have to involve other white people. Any other folks have a suggestion or a thought on how they would proceed with this one? Yeah, you can give us the update. He might have, you know, a reason as to why he did this. That might be the next one. He might have a reason that might sound semi-non-personal, as though there's some legitimate workplace reason as to why this didn't happen. I know that does happen sometimes with overtime and those type of situations where it's supposed to be an increase in pay. Sometimes there can be all kinds of odd caveats, white people or non-white people, as to why that doesn't kick in or why it kicks in later than one thinks it should. But yeah, if you have an update on that situation, please share. Context of white supremacy. Other folks, if you have your own situation or if you have suggestions, comments on what's been shared thus far, the number 605-313-5164, the code 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. Let's see. Other folks who dialed in, if you have a hand up, if you have either your own experience or still, if we have folks, if you have comments, references, making sure you have them at the ready, and or if you have a codification around dealing with children being brought into your work environment, feel free to share.
Hello, may I be heard?
Greetings, Irie. I think that was the Lafayette, Louisiana Mercedes-Benz, where they were bragging about selling black customers higher priced, inflating the price for black customers who wanted a Mercedes, and then calling the black Mercedes-Benz employees niggers. Good to hear from you, Irie.
Thank you. Nice to hear from you as well. And hello to everyone on the line. I'm not surprised. It is Louisiana, and I just heard about it today from a friend, but she forgot to tell me that it was in Lafayette. Honestly, I'm not comfortable any other place in Louisiana but New Orleans. Not even Baton Rouge. But I did have a suggestion for the caller that preceded me. I didn't hear the entire story. I got, you know, just got curious. I was like, okay, let's, you know, what's going on with the workplace situations. And I heard like the tail end about overtime. And I'm not absolutely sure what's going on with where he has to ask the guy, or since you're on the line listening, I don't know what's going on where you have to try to get more time to settle the situation with your coworker. But this suggestion I have may alleviate it for both you and him, where you don't have to intervene for him in the future. When I was working at a state facility, we were notoriously mandated to overtime. And I figured out well ahead of really getting into the groove of doing a lot of overtime that I'm going to get cheated out of my hours. So I took the time to make a chart in which I listed where I was working, the hours I, you know, clocked in to the hours of the end of my shift. Then I had a special role dedicated to overtime. When that started, when it ended, and also the supervisor on duty. And then I also found a way, it may not be as easy for you guys, but I found a way to give legal notice verbally. Hey, supervisor so-and-so, it's Irie, and I am here on a second shift, of meaning not my shift, but a second shift, and I've noted it, and now you know. So maybe that would help, because I also think in the pursuit of getting paid that overtime, a person has to know exactly what those hours were that were worked and when. And I forgot to say the date would be for each role, you know. So just imagine a big, like, spreadsheet, not big, but like a table that had date, shift times, beginning and end. Overtime, beginning and end, and then the supervisor's name, who was, you know, obviously supervisor. And so he could use that as a tool to pursue due diligence on his own in the future. And that's, that's what I want to add. I hope that's a good idea, but we won't know until he practices it and tries it at least once. Thank you. I'm tongue-twisted tonight. Thank you. I'll mute my line.
I know the feeling. Absolutely. Great suggestion, Irie. That is so common in terms of black people being, or non-white people, period, being in employment situations where overtime ends up being disputed. It ends up somewhere being, oh, wait a minute, nope. On this date, you know, you didn't work enough hours, or the overtime didn't start, or you're one of the employees that's exempt. Like I said, it's so frequent where there's some sort of caveat that results in the non-white person missing out on the overtime. And like you said, sometimes they'll use that as like an incentive. We're chasing, thinking that we're going to get it, or we're close to it, or we already got it, and then we don't get it. And, you know, did all this extra hard work chasing that, so that you can do your diligence, so that you know exactly what your hours are. And then I like the confirmation as well, so that this is noted. Oh, okay, this is not my shift even. This is my second shift for my hours, overtime, all of that. So there's no surprise. There's no nothing comes up as an issue. Like, all of this was noted along the way. You have a nice, neat paper trail and a nice spreadsheet to confirm by hours. And I think some other people have said that there are even some apps that are really, really easy that can help you do the same thing so that you have a nice, elegant 2020 record of your hours each week and everything matches up on your paycheck. Because it's just, it's so, so common. And especially in this situation, man, when you got third parties now who got to be involved in this, and you know, try to minimize as much of that as you possibly can to make sure that you get all of your coins, no wage theft. Other folks who dialed in, if we missed you totally, or other folks who did we, I thought I heard someone speak up. Did we miss somebody?
Yeah, I was about to speak up if nobody else was joining in and give my experiences about children in the workplace, quote unquote.
Oh yeah, we asked about that. Let's hear it.
Yeah, well, with the fire service, it works in several ways. Formally, you can call headquarters and organize an appearance to your school, you know, with that particular personnel at a fire station, whether the fire truck or both the truck and the fire truck and the rescue truck, and then what would take place, the two units would go on what they call go on a 10. That means they'll go out of service, and other stations would take their calls, the emergency calls. Or it can be more informal to where you would still go out to a school or a kindergarten or something like that. And if you get a call because you're listening to the radio, you know, you will go on it, respond to it, that sort of thing. You may or may not be able to come back. And also there's a level to whereas even coworkers would bring their children to on a job site, that sort of thing. For the most part, with the latter one, because it's your child, you're going to make sure that you watch out for their safety, that sort of thing. I've never experienced or saw any child get injured or hurt any type of way. One thing about it, though, when a white person would bring their child or children on the job, I wasn't that much interested in the worker, let alone talking about their children. So for the most part, I have this look on my face that he's not inviting as far as a person you want to sit around and speak with. And and children basically will go about their business and whatnot. For the most part, the non-white black employees, I've basically had a workable relationship with, not necessarily quote unquote friends. And if they brought their children around, I would invite their attention, because you never know on who you may be in company of as a non-white black person. That may be the person who can solve a whole lot of problems, you know, that sort of thing. And so I garnish myself accordingly. Of course, in the school situations, probably you all would know, the firefighters would be the stars of the show, no matter, you know, all of the different workplace presentations that happens at schools on the elementary level, kindergarten level, to the high school level. You know, the fire department is always praised, so to speak, also, although that some individuals don't really deserve it. You know, as far as they're concerned, as far as quote unquote saving lives, they may not have went on a call in a year that registered as an emergency. But nevertheless, it was, you know, organized in that way. I didn't spend a great. I can't even remember presenting in front of a audience of white children. It's not in my mind even think about it, but I do know I spent a lot of time on all of those different levels presenting in front of black children. And there's no training for it. There's no practice for it at all. primarily because we drill all of the time. There's no issue about, you know, showing a child your gear, the things on the truck, that sort of thing. A brief talk about what we do and how we do it, that sort of thing, because you do it so much. And knowing who I was in front of and how important it was as far as quote unquote black children, I took a lot of initiative in it, in doing so. Those are basically my memories and experiences that I've had. And thankful that under the system of racism, white supremacy, if it's a number of black children, it's probably not going to be a whole lot of white children involved with them anyway. Thanks to the races and how they have done things in this part of the world that's called quote unquote segregation, that primarily you're dealing with black children. And I've worked for the most part in areas where the people who resided in the area were non-white black people anyway. And those are my experiences. Thank you.
Much obliged, retired firefighter. That is awesome. Great. They say modeling is one of the most powerful ways that children learn. So to be able to go and have retired firefighter going, talking to children. I am one of the folks out here riding the big red truck, putting out the fires, trying to keep you all safe. Spectacular. That is black self-respect again. Had quite a bit of that on the broadcast today. The number again, 605-313-5164. The code 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. Folks have any thoughts? Again, references. That was one question that I asked. Making sure you have references at the ready. Do you use friends as references? How do you deal with coworkers bringing their offspring to the job, having a code to deal with children in the workplace? If folks have any suggestions or thoughts on what's been discussed thus far, or if you have your own situation, feel free to proceed.
May I be heard?
Greetings, caller in Florida.
Yes, sir. Thank you very much, sir. Greetings to Gus, the host, the listeners and callers. I have a few observations from the past few days. This isn't necessarily workplace racism, but it does have something to do with the LGBTQ or whatever the letters are. I've noticed that on my way walking to work that they have where the pedestrian lanes or the intersections that you walk across, they painted a rainbow like on the actual pavement all over the courthouse, on the different corners. So I guess they were preparing for some kind of an event in the downtown area. And I was speaking with the top most powerful white person, and I guess he was preparing to go to an event about something about pride. Yeah, that was a term that was on the brochure, because I try to scan the desk and see, you know, what information is he reading, because he's a political figure, they say. So I think it may be some events coming up on that. That was my first one. My second one is I got a report from the black female that a suspected racist male was, I guess, selling pot roasts. I guess just that right there, the term roast, that's interesting. He actually got money from a black female to purchase a pot roast, and he was doing it for his lodge. I guess he's some kind of a Mason. So, and the term she used, she's not giving money to the Klan. So she said this to him, and it was him, another black female, that gave him the money. So she pretty much broke it down as to why she's calling it the KKK, basically. You're just dressing it up and you're tweaking the words. That's the word she used. So he kind of turned red. You know, he didn't really want to respond or nothing like that. I guess it was some kind of religious talk. So that's the term she used, that this person is a Mason, and she used the term KKK. So she was like, you know, why are you giving your money to to this guy or whatever? So she didn't really press too much or didn't really put too much emphasis on it, but she did ask her. And she just said, well, you know, I just want to help or whatever. So they kind of just went on their way. They didn't really get into too much conflict. That was my second one. My third one is there was an incident that happened where I was coming back to the desk, and it was toward where the black female came in the morning. And I noticed a pattern where the operator will send calls to the phone she's been assigned, and she's not even at the desk comfortably situated yet. So I took the line, I took the call, and she was like, you know what, I'm about to go tell her about this, because, you know, it really does frustrate her. And I definitely think racism was being practiced there, because I know the operator, a person who's classified as white, she knows that this person gets in at a certain time. So she's getting calls received to the desk, and the white person isn't getting the call. So that's another one to pay attention to. So she went out there and confronted the lady about it. And then I overheard them gossiping. You know, I was over there talking to the supervisor. So the lady was like, I just don't know what to do. And sometimes, you know, when you're there sitting there pressing buttons all day, you just press just anything. It didn't make logical sense to me. But she definitely was direct toward black self-respect, I would say. My fourth one is there was a conversation that the same black female and white female was having. And, you know, they had these kind of personal conversations about relationships and stuff. So I kind of just, I guess, disregard listening to it. But this one was constructive in a sense. She said that she was, I guess, curious about this guy she was with, and he's seeing another female, and I don't know what that's all about. But the part where it became constructive is I just don't know if I still want to deal with him, because he tends to throw the N-word around. Now, she talking to the black female sitting in front of her, so she's totally silent, and I still don't say anything. So she was looking in her direction, and it was like, I just don't think she knew what to say. But silence was, I think, a good codified response, but she was still engaged in talking to this person up until that point. So, yeah, we all was just silent in there. So she kind of just got the point and just didn't say anything. And I'm like, why is she so comfortable in sharing this? I think one of the reasons is that she was looking for a response. And she could be, I guess, getting, I don't know if I could say coached or manipulated or asked by another white person to mention these kinds of things out of nowhere to see what response that she'll get. And my next one is, there was another black female that I noticed that's being used to do the cash sharing, but it's like she's not really a part of the department that does it. So they tend to go and ask her to do the cash sharing when the other backup person isn't there. So I'm wondering, I doubt she's even getting paid to do this or even like checked off to do something like this. So that's a few things that I wanted to share for the week. And thanks for allowing me to share. Thanks.
Much obliged. Wowzers. With the white woman who gave the report, the TMI, I don't know if people heard that when I did the audio clips at the beginning and they had the white individual, transgender, I think. And he said he spent 8 months writing a letter to his coworkers about his transgender evolution. And I said, TMI. You're no longer Ted, you're Tina? Okay, that's all I need to know. I do not need 8 pages about, you know, all of that. This white woman, and I don't know. I don't know if I'm going to stick with her. Like, what? We're at the courthouse. What? We're not talking. In my view, that's Delectable Negro. He has a section in the book where he talks about how whites consume the psychic energy of black people. And I think especially in environments where they have us like captive, captive audience, they say, you're in that job for 8 hours or whatever your shift is. You're there. And probably more so, you are in that specific office space for, you know, a good chunk of that 8 hours, 9 hours, whatever it is. So they got you. And hey, I can just go to town. Oh man, we did such and such and such. And they do this a lot. But this one, like you said, I normally try to avoid this, whatever. But this one, whoa, I don't know. I don't know if I want to stick it out. He throws around the N-word. And I think exactly as you said, hey, this is an environment where white people run experiments. This could be a test. He had the other one where the white woman came in and said, oh man, I'm just so outraged that Huck Finn has all that nigger gem in it. I'm outraged about it. What do you think? Think what? Trying to file court records. Like what? When did we get off on an analysis of Tom Sawyer in American literature? I mean, same thing with this white woman. What am I supposed to say? Now, I do know some of us say, hey, same thing we always do, getting the question like, when exactly did he call someone a nigger? What was the context? And see what she says. Let her roll. That way you're not talking. Just let her ride. And she might tell you, oh, okay, wow. And then what did you say? That'd be a good one, too. I suspect if you ask enough of those, she will get back. I think the phone just rung. Don't we have some files? There's a customer. She'll get off the subject if you ask enough of those. But that is an option or nothing. Because, like I said, like you all, all of us, really, white people run experiments. This could be an experiment just to see how you respond in the scenario. So, or anything. So, yeah, silence is always good. Questions are always good as well, either or. Suspicious either way as to why that would be brought up with a black person in a workplace scenario. The rain, man, I had a total Seattle flashback. They have in Seattle, I said at the very beginning of the program that I have a difficult time when people talk about white, LGBT, any other letter being mistreated because I live in Seattle. And I mean, they have like a whole part of town, a very expensive town that's like their area. And they like not a new thing for like years and years. The crosswalks, multiple of them in the Capitol Hill area are rainbow colored, where pedestrians can cross the street safely. It's a rainbow. It's not the normal white and black pattern. And I have an extra chuckle now because this sign, this is even workplace racism. I was walking to the park to teach a yoga class at Powell Barnett Park, which is basically the central district, so-called colored district of Seattle. And the colored district, which is walking distance from Capitol Hill, which is considered the LGBT part of town. So when you get to the Central District, they have red, black, and green crosswalks, which I think is, you know, pretty tacky myself, but whatever. So they have the red, black, and green crosswalk. You know, you're in the nigger part of Seattle, super gentrified now, what they call. I'm walking in the red, black, and green crosswalk, and they have Seattle, they do it up, so they are super walker-friendly town. So in addition to having the red, black, and green crosswalk, they have a button so that you can get flashing lights as well. Plus, this is next to a school where this park is, next to a school residential area. You're not supposed to be flying through here. Lots of children. So the flashing lights are on. I'm walking through the crosswalk on my way to work to teach a yoga class. White man is in his car. He sees me in the red, black, and green crosswalk. He sees me. He is at zero. He is not moving. This is not a case of, oh, I'm moving, nigger in the, no, this is, I'm at zero, and I see a nigger in the crosswalk, the red, black, and green crosswalk, and he steps on the accelerator and pulls out, and I look at him and say, oh, my goodness, oh, my, I'm so sorry, I'm so sorry, I'm so sorry. And I cross in the red, black, and green. I said, now, who wants to go teach yoga? You saw me. This was not a, oh, I was on the phone. Oh, I was trying to get my e-vape pen working right, and I dropped it. My sunglasses slipped off. You were at zero. You looked nigger in the red, black, and green crosswalk with the lights flashing, and bam, stepped on the accelerator. Oh, my God. That is commuting to work in the system of racism, white supremacy. But that was my immediate flash when you mentioned the new rainbow colorings on the sidewalks and corners at the courthouse, I guess, for whatever the event you all are having related to what they call pride. The pot roast, that just, it's 2020. Who is selling pot roasts out in front of the courthouse? Like, I mean, I have been to like McDonald's where they have signs up that say no solicitation. Like, how can you come out and be peddling pot roast at the courthouse? Like, people come to the courthouse to get married and things, and you got to sidestep somebody peddling roast out front. Like, anyway, comparing the Masons to the Klan, like, wow. It is about the same thing. Really, all the white organizations, the church, the Masons, I mean, it's about the same. But yeah, I dig that. I'm not giving money to the KKK. Right on. A little bit more intelligent about white supremacy racism. Roast or no, whatever you're going to do with the money, it's going to come back to practice racism. Wowzers. The N-word. That maybe would have been a question that it might even be a question that I would come back and ask, because I said you can do that too. You can be silent if they say that like on a Friday, and then Monday can come and you can say, you know what, Susan, I kept thinking about that all weekend long. And I said, I cannot wait to ask her on Monday. What exactly was he saying? Like, give me an example. When was the last time he called somebody a nigger? What did he say? And see what she says. Then as she says, and what did you say? He said, that no good Obama's a nigger. I'm glad that nigger's gone. What'd you say? And she'll probably at that point say, I'm stunned. But it's always better if you can get them right then. If you wait, they might take time and backpedal. Like, oh, I don't remember that. Or it was so long ago and that sort of thing. If you can get them right then, you can kind of catch them off guard. You might be more likely to get a little bit more truth from them, because they'll be a little bit surprised. And right in the moment, they won't be able to prepare. They might even be stunned that a nigger asked them a question. Much obliged, caller in Florida, slinging pot roast at the courthouse. Let's see. Other folks, if you have any questions, suggestions, if you have dealt with white children in your workplace, children in the workplace, period, I reckon, feel free. Last few moments of the broadcast, if you have any thoughts you would like to add on, based on what we've heard today. References as well. We talked about that. If you use your friends as references and or things that you do to make sure that you have ready-made references, maybe plenty of them. Like I said, I was a little bit surprised at needing, you know, like five. Like, that is a lot of people to speak well about Gus and to not mention racism.
Hello, may I be him?
Irie in Louisiana.
Yes, hello, I'm back. I'll make this brief for other people. I want to give the caller in Florida accolades for his patience, because I'm at the point with white people when they want to indulge in conversations on the job. I'll say, well, what makes you think I want to hear this? Or why are you telling this to me? And that would be my response. And it, I don't know, hopefully it wouldn't, you know, more wouldn't come out of it. But I don't want to hear it. I don't want to hear your tacky, trashy activities, whatever they are. I don't care if you found a coupon for $50 off, you know, a $50 whatever. It's not something I'm interested in, and it's not something that we're here to do. But, yeah, good job. Thank you for being so patient. The other thing I wanted to further inculcate with the timesheet situation or creating one, I actually was cheated out of overtime. And the reason I knew was because I could refer to my catalog of how, you know, I did my work, you know, when I did it. And come to find out, the reason my hours were wrong was because the timesheet collector didn't like me. And she's now white, victim of racism. She's black. She didn't like me because I hung up on her when she started yelling at me over the phone after an adverse event during my overtime shift. And, you know, while she was yelling, I kind of was surprised, so I just hung it up. And then she called back and she was like, so you about to tell me that the phone hung up accidentally? I said, actually, no, I hung up because you were yelling at me and I don't know why. And it's not professional. So, I mean, we can talk some more. We can talk again, but you don't have to yell at me. I'm an adult and so are you. And so at that time, she wasn't the timekeeper. Then they switched her later. And, of course, she ran across the notorious me in doing her new position and cheated me out of almost like 160 hours of overtime. And at that time I was doing like 85 to almost 90 hours a week. So that's 2 weeks worth of overtime. And I had to also do a form. So that's the only other thing I want to add. I had to do a form and put it in writing with the specific dates and times where I was cheated, and because I gave the notice verbally, you know, and also there was another process at this particular job where you had to sign in to each particular site. It was a big campus, and it had smaller, you know, like homes, they called them, because it was a facility for the mentally disabled. And so because I also made sure to sign in ink to the book, it was verified, and I got my hours back. I got my overtime back. And, you know, again, also, I had to fill out the paperwork as well. That may be a part of the process for reclaiming that time. And so thank you. I'll end my turn completely. Everybody have a good, you know, Friday night and weekend coming up. Thanks. And thanks, Gus.
Much obliged, Irie. Wow, that is monstrous. I mean, wage theft is, I feel like, a euphemism in that illustration. Side note, policy and procedure, sometimes, I will say often, will have the procedure if there is a discrepancy in hours worked or compensation. Oftentimes, they will have a section, maybe even a whole page, about auditing if there is a problem or a dispute with your pay. So policy and procedure. Again, she said they had a whole process where she had to do a written, you know, report about all of this. But I mean, just that alone, and seeing the white person got their promotion. They don't have those problems. They move right on up the ladder, qualified or no, boop, 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 boop. And they move right on up with all of their vindictiveness and racism. Like, oh, yes, I remember that nigger. Hung up on me, didn't you? Oh, yeah. Fix your wagon and then just go in. That's why you have to be really, really diligent. If you are treated well, great, but do not expect to be treated well. Really be mindful, and I mean mindful about everything. That's why I said it's good to check the policy and procedure, because it might not even just be your pay. It might be other things that you are entitled to, other resources, other benefits, other goodies that you are supposed to get as an employee, but you wouldn't know. And maybe they don't tell you all the goodies. I've been in those type of work environments too, where they don't even tell you all of the goodies that you get with the job, unless you have the right person, unless they put everything explicitly in the policy and procedure. And sometimes they do. You just got to read the whole thing. Other folks who dialed in, if you have thoughts, suggestions dealing with offspring in the workplace, making sure you have those references at the ready. If folks have any thoughts there, or on any other aspects of what's been shared. We had our male caller with the situation, really tough one, of all non-white people and a non-white person being denied overtime. And, you know, he thinks this might be something personal, trying to figure out, you know, to intercede. Should he try and go and speak to the supervisor, non-white supervisor, to try to see if he can help alleviate the situation or what to do? Folks have any thoughts on that one? Last few moments before we get ready to wrap up. Proceed. Please do not wait until the last 5 minutes to get a hand up or to chime in if you have thoughts to share.
May I be heard?
Caller in Florida. Yes, sir.
Yes, thank you very much, sir. I was thinking about how some coworkers, some of their children will join the staff. Like I think the term used is nepotism. And I think this is another experiment where I think white people have been trying to get a certain reaction out of black people. There's a white female supervisor who has her daughter-in-law, and this may be another LGBT as well, married to the supervisor's, used to be daughter, but now a male. Okay, so she is married to a guy who used to be a female, but she's been spotted being in the supervisor's office, in her mother-in-law's office. There's a black female stationed right in front of that office who is more than qualified. Well, she's supposed to be the lead worker. So she's obviously physically able to see that this person's somewhat relative is having access to her office while she's not there. So that was what I've been meaning to share. And this person's daughter also was allowed at one point to work in that same area, doing another type of assignment, because they have different departments of one overall area. So I think someone made a report and that person was gone in no time. And here's the interesting thing. The daughter or the granddaughter to the supervisor is non-white. Her mother is white. So I'm not sure. I think she said the person was adopted or whatever. So it's kind of confusing. So she got moved to another place. And my next one on that with offspring, this is a black male child, well, not a child, but young black male who was in college now. There was a comment that was made about him. I guess he was asked to do some more laborious things, make boxes and carry them. So this suspected racist woman was quoted as saying, "I like blank. He'll do whatever you ask him to do. He's a good guy. He'll do whatever you ask him." So it sounds like, and I know I'm using the word like to make a comparison, but that's definitely describing someone as a slave, in my opinion. I had another one. No, I had two more. I got a call from a customer who wanted me to check a property appraiser on finding a property. So as I was doing that, she just started just saying something that was totally unrelated. And she says, man, these properties can get very tough to look after or something. And she said, you know, with all of these foreigners moving in, you know, it's getting tough out here. So I just said, is there anything else I can help you with? And she says, no, well, I guess that'll be it. So I just asked the question, and I pretty much got the female off of the phone. And I think this was a white woman. So I'm just going to say that she's a suspected racist. And we have a new black male that started. What was an act of racism? Because I think they're isolating this victim of racism. But on the first day, the supervisor in that area was like, oh, okay, you know, we got to clean up the area. You know, we got a new person coming in. And they, like, they hired the guy, like, a week prior, and they still didn't even tidy up the area where the guy's going to be sitting. So they're just trying to find a way to clean up the area. She asking somebody else to clean it. She didn't even volunteer to do it herself. You know, it was a couple of boxes around, so she just took the boxes and took them around the corner somewhere and threw the boxes to the side. And you could just tell some of the desks was dusty, just terrible act of racism right there. And I'm going to be making sure that I'm paying attention to how he's treated. And I'll report back on what I noticed. And that's all I have for now. Thanks for allowing me to share.
Ooh-wee. I am super interested in hearing how the new employee is treated. That is a good way of Mr. Fuller talks about comparison. That is a quality way of evaluating justice. Now, I mean, the tackiness. They can't even get the boxes out of the... And again, this is the courthouse. Like, man, like, come on. This is not McDonald's. Like, this is not the pawn shop on the corner. Like, man, and what sort of training opportunities? That'll be good, too, to see if they, you know, train him properly when he comes in. I like this fella. He does whatever. I think can happen to a lot of victims of racism. Just trying to advance, seeking that white validation that was mentioned earlier in the system of white supremacy, John Henryism, however you want to label it. But trying to avoid being mistreated, and hopefully I can hold on to my job, make a few nickels, get a better job, all of that. And just, yeah, I'll do it. I'll try to be as accommodating as possible and thinking that that will curry you some favor with whites. And no, we are just a slave. He just does everything I want. And picking up on the tone of how that sounded from the way that they were talking about that victim, I think. Drop my notes. The nepotism. That is pretty chronic in the system of white supremacy. You can look at the Bush family. I mean, it's lots of illustrations where whites do that on a constant basis, where it'll be their son and nephews and uncles and whomever else. That's rife throughout the system of white supremacy, and frequently it'll be unqualified. Nephews, granddaughters, nieces, sons, daughters, whatever it is, unqualified, who got the position to, you know, do whatever. The whole transgender aspect of it. Wow, that's, yeah. Lots more of that to come. And again, I wouldn't have anything to say about any of that. Just here to work. All of that is, you know, whatever. I'm just trying to get work done. Let's see. Much obliged caller in Florida. Definitely give us the update on how the fella is treated and if they eventually get the rubbish cleared from his work area. Other folks, if you have suggestions, comments you want to make sure you share, last few minutes before we call it a broadcast.
yes, nobody is more traditional with nepotism than the fire department, for sure. It does appear that they leave a little bit with non-white black people. But what I notice that is with those who have shown some sort of allegiance with the shenanigans that white people enact on the job, that sort of thing, that they allow that to take place. My offspring went to a interview for some level of training or acceptance into getting into some sort of training aspect of one day getting hired as a firefighter. Unfortunately, he and I have the same name. And he told me when he came home, he told me that some white male, because I asked, was it a white person? Some white male stated, and I quote, "Your name sounds familiar to him." And, you know, my name is Michael Imani in reality. I'm not, you know, concerned about someone knowing or who I am on your show, but and which is kind of like unique on a job. So that was telling me that that white person was making a connection with the name of my offspring and someone that he have been familiar with on the job itself. But the non-white black people that runs this this website that I mentioned on the program, that a post that I put on concerned about the whether or not that Dade County Fire Department was living up to the hiring practices of black people, and they quickly took it off of the website. They one of the non-white black participants or founders of this website has, I think, at least two younger relatives that have gone through training and is on the fire department. You know, so they pick and choose. They pick and choose, but they themselves, meaning white people, overwhelmingly across the world, actually, are traditional with hiring their grandchildren, nephews, sons, and daughters. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Worldwide, absolutely. Lots and lots and lots of that. It is. That right there could be a whole nother when they talk about the college admissions scandal where they talk about that, like, oh, my goodness, your father and lineage. That's what they call it, where those folks went to the school and, oh, now you can get in and that sort of thing. And sometimes they do it with certain jobs where it'll be passed on one generation. I think they've even said sometimes it would be the firehouses because they, I think you had talked about it before. They would start out as private residences. So sometimes that would go from one generation to the next generation to the next generation, because you not only get the firefighter job, you get the house too, little property or whatever it is. So, I mean,
right.
Lots of worldwide. That is not anything that is special to Florida or Washington or the U.S. That is worldwide. The nepotism of the system. I mean, really, the system of white supremacy is the ultimate example of nepotism, because it's not that many white people, tiny percentage of the global population. So, I mean, that right there is the nepotism in a bunch. Anything else folks need to share before we conclude?
Mr. Fuller said it right. He said they adopted the royalty system, and the royalty system is based on nepotism.
Absolutely. Anything else? updates will be forthcoming. I will let you know. I'll double check the audio to see if we got better recording. Rats about the audio at the beginning. Hopefully won't have any technical issues for tomorrow with the audio being disrupted. Thanks for your patience. We'll have updates, the yoga situation. See if we can make it through the references, background check, all of that with the application process. We'll update next time around. We'll be here tomorrow for the compensatory call-in, 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific. We will review what took place over the last 7 days. If you have counter racist suggestions, be ready to share 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific tomorrow. Thanks to everyone who tuned in this evening. I hope it was a constructive investment of your Friday evening. Sobriety would be best under conditions of white supremacy. Let's keep our brain computers working at maximum efficiency so that we can go about the business of solving the problem. In addition to being sober, let's be buckled up every time we are in a vehicle, passenger, or driver. Let's do everything that we can to minimize contact with race soldiers. That would include not being on the cell phone if you are driving. Let's minimize our contact with the Amber Geigers of the world. Creator, we ask that you help us remain patient with other black people, victims of white supremacy. We ask that you help us remain patient with ourselves. Remind us to demonstrate the highest levels of black self-respect at all times, in all places, each and every time we are in contact with another black person. It has been time. Replace white supremacy with justice immediately. Cal signing out. Thanks all for tuning in.
Nigga, you so brainwashed.
I'm a victim, your brother.
Problem. You're a victim.
I'm a victim of 400 years of conditioning.
Shut up.
The man has programmed my conditioning. Mm-hmm. Even my conditioning has been conditioned.